Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and this is The Takeaway. As we mark the International Transgender Day of Visibility, we're revisiting our conversation from last year with the co-author of the second edition of the book, Trans Bodies, Trans Selves. Let's get to it. Striking, sexy, unapologetic, Laverne Cox casts her gaze down just slightly as she looks into the camera. Her presence on this May 2014 Time magazine cover declares the transgender tipping point. At that time, Laverne was starring in the hit series Orange is the New Black, and Redefining Realness, the first memoir from another Black trans woman, writer, director, and advocate Janet Mock, was a New York Times bestseller. The public visibility of these Black transgender women seemed to affirm a growing public awareness of trans identity and experience. Of course, this was the same time transgender women of color were experiencing an alarming rise in violence. Trans Bodies, Trans Selves was first published in this tumultuous moment. Today in 2023, there's still some of that best of times, worst of times. On the one hand, growing public awareness. But at the same time, state and local policies targeting gay and transgender people flooding states. 47 have introduced anti-trans bills, and 23 of these bills have passed. There are currently 423 still active in states across the country. It's almost like another kind of transgender tipping point. So to meet this particular age, Trans Bodies, Trans Selves is publishing a second edition with new material on transgender youth and focusing on uplifting intersectionality within trans communities. Kelsey Pesha is board president of Trans Bodies, Trans Selves, the nonprofit that organized the book. He's also co-author of the new edition.
This book is for transgender, non-binary, and gender expansive communities and parents, loved ones, providers like therapists, doctors, teachers, anyone who wants to know how to do better when interfacing with transgender people or people that are exploring their gender identity.
So I grew up with the foundational text, Our Bodies, Ourselves. Tell me a little bit about using that model for this book.
Yes. So Trans Bodies, Trans Selves was founded as an organization to create the book in 2012 by a group of medical school students who were finding that there were many holes in their med school curriculum, that there wasn't really any discussion of transgender and non-binary people, even though many of the physicians identified that way. And so I think in a similar way to the creation of Our Bodies, Ourselves, you know, that feminist health resource was created to fill in some holes where, you know, there were a lot of male doctors and specialists who were working with women and girls who maybe didn't have the empathy, the understanding, and kind of the real world experience of what it is like to be a woman going to a doctor's office, right? So that's kind of the genesis of this project, is really wanting to give scientifically accurate, but also kind of grassroots empathy building information to not only providers, but also good information for people who want to know more about themselves. And we're really proud to continue that legacy from Our Bodies, Ourselves.
It does feel to me like there are some differences in tone, in approach that occur when we're talking about our bodies versus when we're talking about our bodies for someone else. I'm wondering about how you thread that needle or build that balance between the piece that is about helping young people, maybe even grown folks themselves, reflect on, think about, consider, be in conversation about their own bodies versus that empathy building piece that you've talked about.
Yes, that is definitely a balance that we have to strike And in the process of writing and editing, we had many, many conversations and iterations of different chapters, you know, something like medical transition. So physicians writing about hormone protocols, you know, when they should be started, what are some of the options for that? We always had to strike a balance between making the resource accessible. So that's the hugest emphasis we put as part of the creation process, is that we want the language to be clear. We want it to be accessible to folks that are not necessarily professionals. And we also wanted to give some guidance for folks that are professionals working in healthcare, mental health, education, et cetera, to have touch points of where they can get more resources. And what I really love about how the book is laid out is that we've got the actual text. Then we've also got sidebars that have online resources, helpful helplines and phone numbers, academic citations that come at the end of each chapter. And then, of course, you know, poetry and essays and photographs and art and comics that were made by us for us. So I think we give a pretty good spread of that personal perspective while also giving scientifically accurate, robustly researched information for professionals as well.
My friend and colleague, Janet Mock, you know, in our conversations, our public conversations that we would have around her books, around her work, she was like, listen, I've done Trans 101. I don't do Trans 101 conversations anymore. So I actually want to talk about my selfhood, right, or my work with actually not talking about my body. And there's ways in which the body becomes the one thing that the public is interested in. Assert for me or help me to understand the ways in which for some parts of the journey, for some parts of the work, the focus on the body is relevant and the ways that that can be made relevant in the understanding of the self.
I think that in popular media, that there often has been a focus on, you know, have you had quote unquote the surgery? I've heard that many times, not in, you know, my life, my loved ones' lives, but also, you know, on talk shows and things like that. So I do think there's a way that cisgender people can get preoccupied with that question. And there's good reason for that. Most people get no education and no exposure to what does it look like if someone wants to medically transition or surgically transition. What we try to do in the book is provide, again, accessible information about medical transition, general medical care and reproductive care, surgical transition, what kinds of techniques are available, when are they appropriate, hormone protocols, and also information about devices and prosthetics that might help people feel more comfortable and congruent in their bodies.
One of the chapters is actually not so much about the body, or at least not in a Cartesian, you know, dualism sense, but about religion, spirituality, the body and the self in that way. And you wrote that chapter. Can you tell us a little bit about that chapter?
Yes. So my academic background is in social work and then a Master of Divinity, which is the professional degree that chaplains and pastors get, and an MA in religion and psychology. So my vocation, my calling, is all about helping people to heal from spiritual trauma and to reclaim their identities as whole people, whether they end up feeling spiritually connected or not. There is a long history. Some of the earliest recorded writings about humans in a spiritual sense include the acknowledgement that some humans are not male or female. They might be fluid between those categories. They might be in between or beyond binary gender categories in some way. We usually refer to this kind of social category as a third gender. Like someone like Joan of Arc, for example, can be viewed as a third gender figure, gender nonconforming, but also her gendered behavior was meaningfully a part of her spiritual journey. And so third gender people are often revered as especially sacred, as knowing something special or unique about God, the universe, whatever the power within that religious tradition is. So for me, that feels like very important information for people to get, because the reality is that Christian colonization of many indigenous cultures who hold that knowledge, but also the meaningful histories within Judaism, Christianity, and Islam have been erased through some of these Victorian and white supremacist colonizing ideals. And I think when we think about some of the political backlash that has happened against transgender and non-binary people, to me, having worked with queer and trans people for about 16 years, it's very obvious to me that religious beliefs, but really misunderstandings of religious beliefs, undergird many of those policies and myths that unfortunately, you know, literally kill people. So the religion chapter is a passion project for me to get those resources to people. But I also think that having those resources can help parents, can help teachers and providers that are struggling religiously with what do I do with a transgender person? How do I understand their humanity in light of my beliefs? That is a vital question for our society today.
Okay, quick break. Back soon on The Takeaway.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I hope to open the conversation about working parents a bit. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier, to find out how they balance being a dad with a successful career. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, you're back with us on The Takeaway, and we're celebrating International Transgender Day of Visibility by bringing you a conversation I had last year with Kelsey Payshaw, co-editor of the new edition of the book, Trans Bodies, Trans Selves.
The first edition of Trans Bodies came out in June of 2014, which was 1 month after Time magazine declared that Time the transgender tipping point, with the cover with Laverne Cox. So there was definitely more of an awareness that transgender people existed. There was a lot more media representation that has certainly grown in the 8 years since. Research would tell us that an increasing number of Americans, this is from a Pew Forum report from 2021, over 40% of Americans know a transgender person, and about 25% know a person who goes by a pronoun other than he or she. So I think what this points to is that there has been an explosion of media representations, and then social media. So you have hundreds of trans and non-binary creators giving you a window into their lives, artistically exploring their gender. And there has been an overall increase in legal protections when you're looking at states, but many of the same barriers exist, even with positive representations increasing. So there have been over 200 anti-trans state laws proposed since 2021, many of them prohibiting or punishing medical transition for youth, access to bathrooms and to athletics. And so for many trans and non-binary people, it's very piecemeal. We have to strategize based on what our health insurance might cover in our state, for example, or what state level protections we have in employment. And so a resource like Trans Bodies, Trans Selves helps with that strategy, right? It provides actual voices of trans people saying, here's how I did it, right? Here's how I loved myself and survived in a system that doesn't totally provide for me yet.
There are ways to read, certain kinds of media visibility as evidence of progress, unidirectional progress. But we've been covering here on The Takeaway a lot the effects of both the actual legal effects on young people, on families of trans and non-binary folks, but also even in those places where there may not have been any law passed, but simply the knowledge that this kind of legislative activity is happening, the effects on people's lives, their spirits, their souls. Can you say just maybe a final beat about that best of times, worst of times?
Sure. So this is complex. Just the conversation, as you said, in the media is enough to cause internalizing self-stigma, not only for LGBTQ people broadly, but also their loved ones. A lot of those, the anxiety, the depression, the lower self-esteem, the self-harm or self-injurious behaviors are the result of that social stigma. But the good news, on the other hand, is that even in, let's say, states where there are oppressive laws, there's also research evidence that to have one person who supports, for example, a youth in their correct name and pronouns, having one parent, one teacher, one therapist who sees their authentic identity and affirms that, it mitigates, it lowers a lot of those harmful long-term, you know, health outcomes. So, you know, if there's one thing that I always say to people, it's that you could be that person. It really does make a huge difference. So never discount, even in that place of frozenness, right? Of I'm not sure how to do the right thing. Pick up a resource like this book and work on being present for the trans and non-binary folks in your lives.
That was Kelsey Pesha, co-editor of the second edition of the book, Trans Bodies, Trans Selves.